Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the good life. Welcome to the good life.
The wait is over.
Welcome to the good life.
And after all this talk, all I gotta say is,
welcome to the good life.
You're welcome. You're all welcome. Like we always do with this time.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, mostly gentlemen from the state of Kentucky today. Welcome to the Good Life Radio Show. Is this another morning edition of this radio program? Yes, it is. For all the listeners wondering if I'm still flying high and on cloud nine after Kentucky's eighth national title, the answer is undoubtedly yes. And I hear the groans already about another Kentucky show. I know I've really promised everyone, no more Kentucky. After I interviewed Derek Anderson, 2 days after the Wildcats won the title, I told everyone it was going to be the end of the UK talk. No more Kentucky talk, I promised you, but I had to make an exception because we have a good guest on the show today, two-time national champion, Kentucky legend, Cameron Mills. He was a freshman on the Unforgettables, the 96 team that Derek Anderson spoke so highly about, and he was a key contributor in 98, and his three-pointer against Duke basically won that game. So anytime I can have a person who hurts Duke University on the show, and I can just keep playing this episode over and over and over for the Duke fans, I have to do it. I actually have a ton of people listening right now because a few different websites are picking up all my Kentucky interviews, and I interview people from all different sports genres and teams, but whenever I do Kentucky, all their websites put their episode on, so it's pretty good. The phone number is always 323-927-2966. This is the 22nd episode of The Good Life, the 19th day of April. The show's webpage is being constructed to make it easier to hear all the interviews with past guests. I'm also including like a picture section. So every item that I solicit and harass a guest for, from Tim Couch's jerseys, Rick Myers' helmets, Daniel Orton sent me a pair of his shorts. Whenever someone sends me something after they do my show, I've been framing it and hanging it up, and it looks really good. So I'm going to put up a picture on the webpage of all that kind of stuff. This really is the last Kentucky show, I promise everybody. Unfortunately, I'm riding solo today. Chuck will be back in full force tomorrow. We're going to start our Yankee talk tomorrow. We have on Bald Vinny, the super fan, the leader of the bleacher creatures for the Yankees. Formerly Section 39, now Section 203. He's the one who leads the roll call every game. He'll be joining us tomorrow night, I believe at 8:30. So Chuck's coming back. Big Justin, he's down 46 pounds. And he's truly sick of me calling him every 30 minutes still about Kentucky, and he couldn't bear to hear another interview. He's texting me now, he's listening, getting ready to throw up. LB's working, I really find myself stuttering when I complete that sentence about that man working. I don't know how the city can hire him. I've got in touch with projected number 2 or 3 overall pick, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I think after 1,040 tweets to him, he finally wrote back. And we exchanged phone numbers and emails, and he promised me that after the NBA draft, he'll give us like 5 minutes for a show. I guess the harassing finally got to him, and he realized he wasn't going to win on this one. Also, a good friend of mine, Chris Canty, he's hosting his charity golf tournament in May. And I'm going to be working there, I guess doing whatever it is. So here's the exact text I sent him last night. Me. Hey, Chris, can I set up a booth at the golf outing to interview all the celebrities and athletes? Chris's response, not a chance in hell. So there's some wiggle room there to negotiate. So I'm going to be setting up a ton of good interviews from there. But all kidding aside, he actually told me it's not an issue at all. He'll get me whoever's coming to play. And, like, I would never ask Eli and stuff because I know they have to go through – they're radio people and stuff, but the biggest guest we had on so far has been Schaub, Meyer, and Tim Couch and stuff. So they're going to – Chris is going to let me do my thing and get any interview I can from his golf outing. So that's actually really cool. I'm going to be working there, taking a ton of pictures. I'll probably be ejected from there pretty early from harassing everybody, but that's all right. We're going to be – hopefully Cameron Mills calls in within 5 minutes. His story is actually pretty crazy. When you hear the interview – it's going to be great. I also want to talk about how I get on the scale in the beginning of January, and I'm like, wow, you know what? I feel my clothes are getting a little tighter. my shirt's a little tighter, the pants are a little tighter. I said, all right. I weigh myself. I'm like, whoa, I gained some weight here. Living this single life, I'm gaining some weight. So I decided that. I'm like, that's it. Now I know how to diet. I did the P90X before. I truly enjoy running. I love running. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go hardcore, set it up for beach season. No cheat days, no fat. So January 18th, I said, my goal is to lose 30 pounds. That's what I need to lose. I need to drop 30 pounds. So I go hard. Like, my diet was the strictest one you can ever see. But you know what? All that's going to be on hold because the guest today is calling in. Each NCAA tournament has the picture-perfect moment that defines the game. Early on, now it's Mario Chalmers three-pointer against Memphis. Tyus Edney going coast-to-coast against Missouri. Maybe it's, I don't even want to say his name, Christian Laettner hitting that shot. Weber's timeout. Maybe when Jimmy Valvano's running around looking for someone to hug after winning the 83 title game. In my opinion, and again, totally my opinion, the defining moment, or should I say the moment that sticks in my mind the most of the 98 team, happens when the buzzer sounds, the game's over, Kentucky's named national championship. CBS zooms in on number 21, clutching the ball, lying on the court, crying, and truly soaking in the moment. He wasn't just a one-and-done guy, no, he's going to the NBA right away. He truly fulfilled his dream. His dream came true, and he soaked it all in. So let me introduce to the Good Life Radio Show, I'm a huge fan of this man, the great Kentucky, Cameron Mills. Cameron, good morning, bro. Thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Dude, I'm doing awesome. I really appreciate you giving me a couple minutes of your time.
This is sure.
Listen, I'm up here in New York. I'm a diehard Kentucky fan.
You need to explain how that happened.
Not a problem. And just so you know, I interviewed Tim Couch, Derek Anderson, Daniel Orton. They've all been on the show, and they all asked the same question.
Your listeners are tired of hearing it then.
Oh, that's okay, though, because they're tired of me just gloating about Kentucky. So, and I promise them this is the last Kentucky interview. I'll tell you quick, Cameron. 92. I'm 10 years old, 11 years old. All my buddies were all like, you know, they were a little older, 14, 15, 16. They're all front-running Duke fans. So they have a party. A buddy of mine, John, has a little party at his house. So I go to it. It's around the corner, and everyone's rooting for Duke. It's a Duke-Kentucky game. And completely as a joke, just to be like a little punk kid, I start rooting for Kentucky. I don't know any of these guys. I don't know Sean Woods. I don't know any of these guys. Jamal Mashburn, I'm 10 years old. But I start following this team, and it's the Laettner game. And Cameron, I'm into it, like going crazy, like digging to beat Duke. And then Laettner hits that shot, and it just sunk in. I was devastated. I start crying. I go home, and my mom's like, why are you so upset? I'm like, she's never heard the word, and I'm a diehard sports fan. She goes, I never heard you talk about Kentucky ever. But from that moment, the truth, she ordered me like the Kentucky starter jacket. And since then, my life, and Cameron, I'm going to be honest with you, a big reason I'm single is because of the Kentucky and the Yankees. I just flew down to New Orleans for the title game by myself. I went down there. I slept outside in Jersey in 96 when you guys played UMass. I'm telling you, it's an obsession. I get the Kentucky newspaper. It's my love affair with the Wildcats is an absolute obsession.
that's a cool story, and certainly you're, I'd say, pretty well standing by yourself as far as how you came to UK fandom, but that's pretty incredible.
And kind of real quick, so like this year, you know, Kentucky played Kansas up at the Garden to start the season off, so obviously I go there, and I'm going crazy, and people are like, I hear your accent. How are you a Kentucky fan? So all the Kentucky fans, and you know how Big Blue Nation travels, they're all like, so it's phenomenal. So I'm a huge Kentucky fan. So having you on is tremendous. All right.
Well, good. Well, thank you.
Okay. So let me take a couple minutes. Thank you again for calling in. But you grew up in Kentucky.
Sure.
Obviously, you're a great high school basketball player. You were offered a full scholarship to play for Georgia. You turned it down to walk on to Kentucky. Was it a tough choice? And why'd you do that?
No, it wasn't a tough choice. You know what? My dream, you know, when I was 10 years old, was to play basketball at Kentucky. Now, you know, I grew up in Kentucky. My dad played basketball for Kentucky back in the 60s. He played for Coach Adolph Rupp. So, you know, I didn't have much of a choice as far as who I was going to root for, and I didn't much care, you know, because Kentucky basketball is such an enormous thing down here, and, you know, everybody, it's what you do. It's, you know, all those, everyone rooting for that Duke, for Duke at that game you attended, the 92 semifinal. You know, that's what I grew up around, except they were all UK fans. And then you add to that, dad's time when he wore blue and white. That was my dream. I wanted to follow in his footsteps, wear the same number he wore. The problem was I wasn't quite good enough. I mean, I was good enough to play Division I college basketball, but not at Kentucky. And, you know, Coach Pitino had seen me play at his camp, knew I was a Lexington kid, knew I was a Kentucky boy, but, you know, just could not waste the scholarship. I mean, I don't even know if he ever gave it much thought. But Georgia had offered a full ride. And to be honest, I wasn't, you know, my full dream was to play Kentucky basketball, but I definitely had a dream to play college basketball. And, you know, when you want to play college basketball, you want to play at the highest level. And I had the opportunity to go D1, but my heart was never at Georgia. It just, you know, and, but the thing was, Mike, is I wasn't going to say no to Georgia if they were giving me that opportunity. But what happened is my dad, who, like I said, played at UK, still had a connection down there with Bill Cotley, the legendary equipment manager who was there for like 35 years. He was there when my dad played. So my dad knew him, had a relationship with him. And so the day I was supposed to sign my early signing period letter of intent to play at Georgia, my dad went down to see Mr. Cotley and just say, look, this is before Cameron's senior year. Cameron really wants to come here and play. What if he has a fantastic senior season? And if he does, then, you know, is there any chance UK is going to be interested? And, of course, Mr. Kiley didn't know, so he immediately talked to Billy Donovan, who was the head assistant at the time. And I think Billy came down to the equipment room and said, you know, we're really set at two guard. That's the position Cameron plays. You know, we like him. We think he's a great kid. But, you know, even if he has an incredible senior season, we're not going to be interested in him. And then somewhere, and this is where I get the story confused because I'm not exactly sure who suggested it, but somebody, either Mr. Kiley, Coach Donovan, or maybe even Coach Pitino at this point, suggested, well, look, if he really wants to play here that bad, why did he walk on? We'll give him what they call, I guess, a preferred walk-on. He doesn't have to try out. He'll be on the team. The only difference between, say, he and Tony Delk is, you know, you all have to pay for his tuition, and Tony's getting a scholarship. And so Dad immediately came to get me out of school, not really out of school, but came to school to tell me what they had said. And, you know, the first thing he said to me is, they want you to walk on. Well, all I heard was, they want you. So we had the clarification, and I, you know, my only question to Dad was, well, you know, can you afford it? And in-state tuition at that time wasn't too bad, and he could. And so at that point, the decision was made. And so, you know, long story short, to answer your question, I guess I told a long story, but it wasn't a hard, difficult decision. It wasn't a difficult decision at all. It was very easy to make.
And you know what's funny, Mr. Cameron, so I make a list of all the questions I want to ask you. And this is the truth. Question number two, I'll tell you questions two and three because you actually answered them, which I'm glad because I actually was curious. I said, my next question was, wasn't it going to be a big chance to pass up on Georgia to just walk on Kentucky and maybe not make the team? So now you clarified that you knew you were going to be on the team.
Didn't have to try out,
And the third question I was going to ask is, were your parents, you know, upset with you? Listen, you have a full ride to, you don't have to pay for school. Now we got to pay for school, but you said it was in-state tuition, so it wasn't.
No, it wasn't, you know what, they were just as excited as I was, and it was not. And, you know, the cool thing is I only wound up having to pay for 2 years of school. Coach Pitino gave me a scholarship my junior year, and Tubby Smith renewed my scholarship for my senior year. So they only had to pay 2 years of school for me.
That's great. Now, listen, you were a member of the 96 team as a freshman and the 98 team.
Sophomore.
I still think the 96 team is the best team, I really do, in the history of college basketball. Compare those two teams. What's the big difference between those two teams?
Between 96 and 98?
Yes, the two title teams.
Talent, really. I mean, you're right. The 96 team was one of, you know, it's funny, Mike, you know, you obviously are a super fan, and I am too, but I don't watch a lot of college basketball. I didn't beforehand. I did obviously Kentucky, but really Kentucky is the only team I watch now just because of my time restraints, just doing all the other stuff I'm doing right now. And so it's hard for me to say whether we were the best team ever, but I certainly know we were one of the best teams ever because, you know, that year in 96, the media was talking, you know, it was kind of the media joke to say that the first five substitutes, the second team, in other words, was the second, you know, ranked team in the country behind the first five. And so the talent was really what was different. And I think also there were expectations on the 96 team. I mean, we started that year ranked number one, and the expectation was we were going to win it all, you know, and then we wind up losing either our first or second game of the year to UMass.
To UMass, Coach Calipari. And Marcus Camby.
Yeah, that's right. Marcus Camby, and he had a, and I'm going to forget their names, but there were a couple guards on that team that were fantastic, and they just kind of beat us. I can't even remember where we were. I want to say Chicago, maybe, but they beat us, and you know, that kind of, you know, we dropped in the rankings a little bit, but then we didn't lose another game that year until the SEC championship game against Mississippi State. They beat us, and then, of course, they went on the Final Four. But the expectations in 96 were enormous. Everyone expected us to win it, to win the national championship, at least to get to the Final Four. In 98, we didn't have those expectations. I mean, we did personally, because I don't think any Division I team goes into the season and has anything or shouldn't have anything other than, you know, a goal at least to get to the Final Four, to get to the, you know, to win a national championship. That ought to be your goal, whether it's realistic or not. So we did as a team, but no one else. I think we started the year ranked maybe in the top 10, but I'm thinking more 11, 12, or 13. Mm-hmm. So no one thought we would do it. And then add to that, we got a brand-new coach. And what are the chances that a brand-new coach is going to be able to come in and gel the squad into a team by the end of the year, you know, when you're including new offense, new defense, new coaching staff, just a whole bunch of changes? So that was really the biggest difference, is that there weren't the expectations on us, other than the usual, you know, UK fans always expecting a national championship. You know, the expectations on us in 98 weren't nearly what they were in 96.
No, they weren't. And listen, I'm going to shoot up a little bit, because when I had Derek Anderson on, we talked for – he loved that 96 team. He made that DVD, the Unforgettables.
Yeah.
And let me ask you your opinion, without being biased, because he was adamant about who was going to win.
I know.
This team this year was a phenomenal team with Kid Gilchrist, Anthony Davis.
Yep.
This team was great. They bought into Coach Cal's system. They gelled. They did everything right. And it was so similar to the 96 team. The loss early on when Kentucky loses to Indiana. Then they lose in the SEC championship. It was very similar. Would that team stand a chance against the 96 team, the Unforgettables?
You know what? There's a part of me. It's so hard to answer that question, Mike, because I've been asked that a bunch recently. And because I don't want to be – I'll answer it. But what I'm saying is I don't want to be one of those, you know, one of those has-beens that say, well, back when we played, this team wouldn't stand a chance against us, you know. But you know what? There's a part of me that thinks that the 96 team was better just because college basketball was different then. I mean, so different. I mean, you still had players leaving early for the NBA, but not nearly as many as now, obviously. And I think, you know, this team was dominant this year. The 2012 UK team was dominant. I mean, they really, you know, in the Final Four games, they had leads of, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 points. In the championship game, I think they had a similar lead on Kansas.
They were up 18 at one point, yeah.
18, yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they looked just dominant. And because of that, everyone wants to compare them to, you know, some of the greatest teams ever. And I think they belong there. But college basketball isn't as good now as it was in 96. And in 96, you know, you've got guys, all teams have guys that are sticking around for 3 or 4 years and just naturally become better players and better teams. And so it would be harder to beat those teams the way this team ran through some of these teams, because a lot of these teams are just younger. And but having said that, maybe with the exception of last year's team, this has certainly been one of my favorite UK teams in the last, you know, 10, 12, 11 years, just because of what you said at the beginning as we started to talk. These guys have been here 1 year, and to come in and to sacrifice their stats, to sacrifice playing time, you know, early in the season when Deron Lamb
Terrence Jones.
Darius Miller, yeah. Darius were, you know, they were trading off who started each game, and neither one of them cared about starting. All they wanted to do was win. Mike, you don't get that from freshmen, and you certainly don't get that from, you know, freshmen today with this AAU culture of being all about my stats, all about my brand, and that kind of thing. You don't see kids like this, and that's what was so special to me, is these guys came in and really did what we did in 98, which was, look, I don't, you know, we had about 10, I bet we had 8 or 9 different leading scores throughout the year in 98. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter. You can't game plan for a team like that. You can't come in and say, all right, guys, tonight we have to stop Nazee Muhammad. Okay, Scott Padgett will go off. Jeff Shecker will go off. Wayne Turner will go off. Hashimu Evans will go off. I even went off a couple games. So, you know, it's hard to game plan for a game like that, and I think that's exactly what happened this year. I mean, I don't know how many different leading scores we had. I guess it would be 6, because those 6 guys got the bulk of the playing time all year. But there wasn't, you know, there was obviously our player of the year in Anthony Davis, but he wasn't the only star. We had 6 stars, and all of them said, winning is more important than my stats.
And that's what I love so much about this team, because when Cal Perry comes, as a Kentucky fan, I'm beyond excited. We get Coach Cal.
Yeah.
He's a great recruiter. And then, you know, he brings in the great team, because I think one of the most talented team was that John Wall team. Wall, Bledsoe,
yeah.
Cousins, Patterson,
yeah.
Orton. They were special, but they really didn't buy in completely. And I was worried, like, are all these kids going to come here one and done? They want to get their stats up, get on SportsCenter and go. And then you see this team. This was a special, special team.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, for that exact reason. And, you know, that's why I said last year's team was special to me, too, because, you know, they had far less talent than Coach Cal's first year and this year, obviously, but yet they got to the Final Four ahead of his first-year team for that exact reason, that they all bought into the system. They said, you know what, we go farther than I go, and that's what happened.
Now, Cameron, you really got the chance to play a lot more your junior year. You shot something like 49, 50% from the three-point line. You were the assassin. How tough was that Arizona loss in 97? Derek Anderson gets hurt in the middle of the year. How tough is that 97 loss to Arizona in overtime?
Well, you know, looking back on it, it's a lot tougher than it was at the moment, to be honest. And usually you'd think it'd be the other way. Usually
yeah,
you'd think
you'd
get over it as time went on. But for me, looking back on it and knowing that had we won that game, of course you never know if we'd won that game, what would have happened the next year or, you know,
maybe
a couple
times. Maybe hungry, sure.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but looking back on it now and knowing that we would have had the chance to three-peat and be one of the, I think, the first team to three-peat since, you know, the UCLA teams back in the 60s and 70s, you know, that to me, that kind of makes that loss a little bit harder now than it was then. To be honest, then, I think, you know, I was looking at it, you know, from a personal standpoint as, you know, I finally got some playing time. I got to contribute to a great Kentucky team, not a national championship Kentucky team, but a great Kentucky team. And I was just kind of thrilled personally for myself. You know, the disappointment of the loss came from, you know, feeling for guys like Anthony Epps and Jared Prickett and, you know, guys that were seniors. This was their last time. You know, that hurts because you want, you know, one of the greatest things I can say about my career, Jeff Shepard's career, Tony Delk's career, Walter McCarty's career, Allen Edwards' career, is that, you know what, we won our very last college basketball game ever. And that's a great thing to say. And, you know, to be so close to doing that in 97 and to lose really in overtime. And, you know, just because we missed some foul shots down the end, I mean, that's really what makes that tough, is that we were so close.
Without a doubt. Now, team, oh, Miles Simon and Mike Bibby, that made me sick. Okay, I'm going to go right to 98.
Yeah.
Right to 98, your senior year, you got a new coach, like we said, Tubby Smith. Right to the NCAA tournament, you're playing arch-rival Duke, who I can't stand. You guys are down by 16, 17, or 18 with like 10 minutes left. I remember watching that game in my house. I'm telling you, this is the truth. Sick to my stomach, because like I said, all my friends are Duke fans. They're calling me nonstop. Before texting, they're calling my house nonstop about the game. You hit that three-pointer. I still think it was the biggest three-point I've ever seen. Gives UK the lead. What are you thinking there? You guys are down by 17, and your team was good in 98. You weren't the 96 team. What goes?
No.
Did you want the ball? What goes through your head when you get that ball and you shoot? And the place erupted when that ball went in.
Well, I'll tell you this first of all. I was in the exact same emotional state you were, except either on the bench or on the court. I was sick to my stomach because you're sitting there thinking, you know, it's just what I said. You want to win your last – you know, this is my senior year. This is Jeff's senior year, Allen's senior year. Turned out to be Nazi's, I think, last year. I mean, you want to go out on top. You want your senior year, your last year, to be champions. And so when we're down, you know, we had pretty well run through the NCAA tournament at that point. I think our game before Duke, we had beat UCLA without – I want to say, was it Baron Davis, maybe? Without Baron Davis had turned his ankle, you know, so he wasn't playing, but we wound up beating that UCLA team by like 20 or 30 points. I mean, we just destroyed them. And then we come up against Duke, and Duke was the number one seed, I believe, was a great team. And, you know, we expected to compete with them, and all of a sudden we're not. I mean, we're just – they are killing us, and – I'm sitting there thinking either, you know, when I'm in the game, when I'm on the bench, you know, just sick to my stomach thinking this cannot be how we go out. And, you know, I get a lot of credit for that three-point shot I hit, which, you know, did give us the lead for the first time in the game. But, you know, if it wasn't for guys like Scott and Hashimu and Jeff and Nazi and Jamal McGlure and truly, because I went back and watched that game not long ago, Wayne Turner, who just started to destroy Wojciechowski and just get to the lane whenever he wanted to. If it wasn't for those guys, then, you know, my shot doesn't mean much. Actually, it doesn't mean anything. And so, you know, when it – I didn't necessarily want the ball in my hand. I did not want it. The ball just bounced to me. If you go back and watch the play, I think Wayne misses a shot. Shamu Evans just kind of bats it back out towards the top of the key. It bounces directly under Scott Padgett's outstretched hands and right up to me in shooting position. And, I mean, I just – you know, I just did what I'd been doing for, you know, 4 years in practice at least, if not in games, and that is catch and shoot, which is, you know, really the only thing I could do well. I was terrible on defense. I didn't handle the ball well. As a matter of fact, there's one play in the 98 Duke game where I got the ball in my hand, or it may have been the championship game, I don't remember, but I've got the ball in my hand, and Jeff Shepherd, who was not quite assured of my ball handling skills, decides to call a timeout just to get the ball out of my hands. And he and I kid each other about that have for the last 14 years. But, you know, I could shoot. So the ball bounced to me. I was about 3 or 4 feet behind the three-point line, probably about, you know, 1 foot behind it when I actually released the shot. But just caught it and shot it. And I don't think I really realized when I was doing it the impact that shot would have. I don't think I knew necessarily what the score was. I mean, I knew we were close. But you don't think about that stuff in those moments. At least I don't. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of players, it's just reactionary, and I think that's what it should be. What you don't, if you're open, you shoot it, and that's what Coach Pitino and Coach Smith had both instilled in all of us as players, is that if this is your game, you know, if you're an outside shooter, if you've got an open shot, you shoot it, because you're hurting the team if you don't, and so that's what I did.
Now, Kevin, I'm going to tell you something funny about this. One of my closest friends, I don't know if you're a football fan, is Chris Canty from the New York Giants. He's one of my close friends, and okay. When I started messing around with this, like podcast, whatever, he's like, listen, you know how to interview people. Just don't sound too much like a fan. But I'm going to tell you, I can care less right now. When you hit that shot, this is the truth, Cameron. I'm in my room, obviously living at home with my parents. You hit that shot. I start screaming. And I'm going to sound like a little baby, like a girl. Oh, my. My mom came flying in. She's like, are you all right? I'm telling you, it was one of the best moments of my life. All right, I want to jump now to the Utah game, championship game. You hit those two monster three-pointers. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Yeah.
You're down by, I think you guys are down by 10 or 11 at halftime against Utah.
We're down 10, yeah.
Okay, you guys think, this is it. This is your last game, living the dream in Kentucky. You hit those two three-pointers. Which is a better title win for you, the 96 one because it's your first one, or 98 because you were more of a part of it and it was the finale?
Yeah. The 98 one, definitely. I was on the team in 96, but wasn't really a part of the core group of guys that, you know, I wasn't at all a part of the core group of guys that gave us that championship in 98. I was the guy on the end of the bench who got in the game when we were up 30 points with a minute 5 left to go. That was my role in 96.
Mm-hmm.
98, I had a completely different role. I was the sixth or seventh man off the bench. I, you know, was the leading scorer at least once that year on the team, you know, for one game. You know, probably
the
within the average.
Wasn't it?
That's right, the Florida game where we got beat at home. I hit 8 three-pointers and had 31 points, which was my high score of all time. Even in high school, I never scored 31 points. So I had a role, and that involved being in the game when the game was on the line. And for that reason, and also what we talked about earlier, this 98 team wasn't, you know, outside of Kentucky, wasn't expected to do much that year. I mean, we were expected to be competitive, but not expected to be necessarily a contender to go back to our third Final Four in a row and our third final game in a row and to win our second national championship in 3 years. But because we did, and again, back to this year's team, what made that 98 team so special to me is because, again, none of those guys were worried about their individual stats. You know, Nazee didn't care, Jeff didn't care, Scott didn't care, Jamal didn't care, I didn't care. You know, none of us, all we worried about was winning a national championship. That was the goal. And, you know, that's what makes things so different now. When these guys come in and, you know, they're looking for college to be their, you know, their jumping off spot for the NBA, you know, and so you would think that all of them would be worried about, you know, their draft stock, their draft potential. These guys bought in. Coach Cal did a fantastic job of convincing these guys, look, let's win. And if we win, then you all look better. And that's exactly what happened. That's what happened in 96 when we won the national championship. You know, Tony Delk and Walter McCarty got drafted high. Mark Pope got drafted high. Got drafted, I want to say, at the end of the first round.
He did. It was first round.
Yeah, because Because what he had proved to, I think, a lot of players or a lot of NBA teams is that he knew how to be a part of a winning team. And, you know, as much as NBA, I think they want talent, and they certainly do, they want guys that know how to win. Because, I mean, you can look in the NBA and see guys that, you know, have kind of come out of this AAU mentality of just being about their points and their stats, but yet they don't know how to win basketball games. They don't know how ultimately to sacrifice themselves for the good of the team. And, you know, that hurts.
Without a doubt. Now, Cameron, let me tell you something. The reason you're one of my favorite players, and I'm not just saying that because you're on the phone. In my interviews with Anderson and Couch, I've said that you're one of my favorite players. And it's because you weren't a typical McDonald's All-American, future first-round draft pick. I always say when I compare this, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way, you're like a better version of Rudy. You walked on, living the dream.
Yeah.
You were way more talented. Let me ask you a question. If Louisville offered you a full ride, would you have went?
You know what's funny about that question, Mike, is Louisville was recruiting me, and if Louisville had offered me a scholarship and Kentucky had not offered me a walk-on, yes, I would have, as a matter of fact, because I wanted to stay home. I wanted to stay as close to home as I could. I still wanted to play college basketball. Never felt comfortable. You know, not that the Georgia coaching staff weren't great and phenomenal and, you know, didn't make me feel home. I just – you know, look, I'm a mama's boy. I'm very close to my mom and my dad and the rest of my family. I'd lived in Lexington for, lived in Kentucky pretty much my whole life. Lived in Lexington for the last 6 years and just didn't want to go too far from home. So, Louisville was recruiting me. I was their second choice at two guard position for 98. They offered a scholarship to their first choice, and if he had said no, they would have offered it to me, and I would have said yes if Kentucky hadn't offered me a walk on.
Wow, that's pretty surprising. I was actually curious about that. Being such a Kentucky fan, would you have ever done that?
Yeah.
Okay, now
it would have been hard, but you know, look, it's, you know, at some point you just kind of, as much of a Kentucky fan as I was, obviously, I wanted to play college basketball and I wanted to play college basketball as close to home as possible. And you know, for a few weeks there, Louisville was the best choice because Kentucky wasn't interested.
Okay, now besides the two title games when you won the championship, what's your favorite game? Was it dropping all those points on Florida? Was that your most memorable game at Kentucky?
Yeah, probably. You know, what's funny about that game is, you know, you always have to be careful what you say to the media. And it, you know, after that game, you know, I'd hit 8 3-pointers, had 31 points. It was my best game ever as a Kentucky basketball player as far as just total offensive output. And I even played, you know, defense fairly well that game. And you know, I even had an old-fashioned 3-point play. You know, got had an and one, and so you know, just my overall best game. But we lost, and that really kind of soured it. So after the game, you know, all the media is around me talking about my 3-point shooting, and you know, I'm sitting there telling them, you know, guys, to be perfectly honest, I would rather have my usual, maybe one shot, 5 points, you know, my usual, you know, senior year performance, and a win than 31 and a loss. Which is what I should have said, but Mike, that was such a lie. I remember them sitting there kind of smiling. I remember they're kind of smiling on, you know, on the inside, thinking, "Are you kidding me? This, you know, one time in my career can I not have a big game like this and just be happy about it?" And so, I was disappointed in the loss, but I don't know that I would have traded that day for a win, especially considering how the season wound up anyway.
Exactly. Now, after 98, you finish up. Did you ever think, or maybe you have? Did you have any of? You never pursued basketball after 98 professionally overseas or anything else?
No, I didn't. I remember I got one letter from some sort of agent from Italy saying, you know, you need to come over here and try out for the Italian national teams or something like that.
Okay.
My life since I was a little kid has been about my relationship with Jesus Christ. And
you
I went
as
into
a minister,
full-time
don't you?
Christian ministry. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I went into full – I'm sorry, say that again?
No, I said you travel around as a minister. Is that correct?
That's right. Okay. That's what I do now. And so in my life, so since I was 12 years old, I've always felt called to do that. I've always felt that's what I was supposed to do. So to be honest, even, you know, my freshman year, I knew that's what I would wind up doing eventually with my life. And my freshman year with Coach Pitino was so difficult because the leap from high school to college basketball is enormous. And then, you know, when you're dealing with you know, a coach with expectations like Rick Pitino, you know, it's just that much more difficult. You know, he's hard on his players. And that transition was very tough for me. So I remember going home, you know, about five times to mom and dad, being ready to quit. and just say, I can't do this. I want to go ahead and maybe I'll transfer to a Bible school somewhere. I'll go ahead and start, getting ready for ministry and that kind of thing. And of course, thankfully my parents wouldn't let me. They said, no, this has been your dream since you were a kid. You're not quitting. And, obviously with how things turned out, I'm very thankful for that. But, so when my senior year came, I was ready to start speaking. And, because of the notoriety my team had gotten going to 3 straight Final Fours, I had all kinds of opportunity to speak when that championship season was over in 98. I actually had about a year and a half to 2 years of speaking engagements already booked by the time May came around of 1998. And wow. So basketball was never something – it's never been my life. It's been a big part of my life but never been the most important thing in my life. And so I was pretty well ready to hang up my shoes after that championship game. And I think a lot of that, too, had to do with winning that game. I think, maybe if we had lost in 98, I would have felt some sort of irritation and some sort of sense of unfinished business of, something. But because we won in 98, I felt like, this is the time to kind of be done with it and move on with your life.
Yeah, 98 team, that was your closure. You really couldn't get any higher than that. That was it. You won a title, and you contributed a lot to your dream team.
That's exactly right.
Are you still involved in Kentucky basketball at all?
I'm involved in the sense that I do a radio show down here in Lexington before every game.
Okay.
I've gone to a couple of practices since Coach Calipari's been here. But, Coach Smith was my coach. Coach Pitino was my coach. Coach Cal's not been my coach. So I don't feel the closeness to him. I've met him a couple of times. I don't know that he would recognize me if I walked down a hallway. But I've met him a couple times, but look, those other two guys were my coaches. And so, I was closer to the program when Coach Smith was here, than I am now, but I certainly still, I'm much more of a fan now. And, I don't lose sleep over a loss, the way some UK fans do.
I was
a lot more nervous, last year and this year, because of the, when we got to the Final Four, I got to the point where I couldn't watch the games. I was so nervous for them, which I've never, I've not been like that, since my career ended. I've always watched the games and hoped for the best for them, but, kind of with this understanding that, life is bigger than Kentucky basketball. But I tell you what, when they got to the Final Four last year, I got to the point where I was pretty nervous for them, and same thing for them this year as well.
Now, I'll tell you something really funny about not watching the games. I'm a huge sports fan. I watch every single sport. But my heart is with Kentucky and the Yankees. And this year, after the first win, they win the second game, they beat Iowa State. I said, this team's going to the Final Four. And I didn't want to jinx it, but so I go on StubHub and I buy a ticket to the Final Four game, the first game, and the title game. Only the first Final Four game. It turns out they're playing Louisville, and I was so nervous, I couldn't go. This is truth, Cameron. I couldn't go. I resold it on StubHub and parlayed it back, basically, to get my tickets for the championship game. The Louisville game, and this is the truth. I know my mom's listening right now, but I really wish you would call in. The Louisville game, and this is pathetic, the night before, and I'll tell you the reason why. The night before, I stayed up I stayed around 20, 30 hours straight just so I would be dead tired, and I fell asleep basically half the Louisville game just on purpose. I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep my eyes open. I made sure I fell asleep. I woke up at halftime, and that's how serious it was. And I always say, people think I'm crazy, but here's why. I was spoiled. I remember I'm 15, 16 years old. 96, you guys win it. 97, you lose in overtime. 98, you win it. So now I'm thinking, okay, every year, now remember, I'm 15, 16 years old. I remember the same way. The Yankees won
That's
it in 96, in 98. So I'm like, oh, my God, Kentucky and the Yankees, every year. And then all of a sudden, it's not really a drought. We had those bad losses to UAB and Marquette.
Right.
But now all of a sudden, you look up, I'm like, holy crap, it's been 13 years since Kentucky's won a title. And that's why I was saying this year meant so much to me. Because I feel like, okay, now I can act like maybe a human being. Now, if we don't win a title, okay, I just watched them win it. I appreciate this win so much more because I wasn't spoiled into the whole lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely. I think your term is apt there, too, spoiled, because I think a lot of UK fans got spoiled by what we did in the 90s because it got to the point where they really expected a Final Four team. They got one 3 years in a row, so they learned to expect one every year. And, look, it's hard to get to a Final Four, and it's much harder to win a national championship. And you know, not to sound so self-aggrandizing, but, you know, we made it look somewhat easy in 98 or 96, 97, 98 going, you know, to three straight championship games, but it's not easy. You know, you've got 300 some odd Division I college basketball teams all with the same goal, and to be the team that, you know, not necessarily always worked the hardest, but certainly one of the teams that worked the hardest and then had things bounce their way, had the right calls. It takes a lot to bring a national championship home. And so, but I'll tell you this. Now, you realize, I'm sure, as a Kentucky fan and a Yankee fan, that every single time Kentucky wins a national championship, the same year the Yankees win the World Series. You know that, right?
All the time. I know that. Yep. 7 out of the 8 times that Kentucky's won a title, the Yankees have also won, so that's why I'm pretty excited.
That's right.
Excited.
So this year, there's pretty high expectations on our Yankees.
There are. So, okay, a couple more questions. How great is it having Ashley Judd as a super fan? She's actually – I love her. How cool is it every game? I want to tell you something funny. I don't say what I do for a real profession. I'll text you afterwards and tell you what I do. But I'm working one night, and I see her, and I approach her, and everyone – this is around 5 years ago, and everyone's like, Ashley – and I start talking about Kentucky basketball, and the truth is she stopped and talked for around 3 or 4 minutes. It was about Tayshaun Prince and that team. And she was talking about, like, she's a legit, like, Keith Bogans. How cool is that, having Ashley Judd as a fan?
Well, it is pretty cool because, as you say, rightly so, she's really a fan. She didn't just show up to the games just to be seen. She knows about the history of Kentucky basketball. She knows, you know, stat lines. She actually follows. This is really, you know, one of her big hobbies in her life, other than making movies and being involved politically as she is. She loves Kentucky basketball. And so it is cool because, you know what, there are probably a lot of celebrities, you know, Hollywood movie stars who, you know, maybe have a team, you know, where they grew up and that they cheer for. But I don't think anyone takes it as seriously as Ashley does. And so we are very proud to have her as a super fan because she really is a super fan.
It's so true because now when the Yankees or the Knicks or anyone up here is playing good, you see every celebrity at the game. But you see Ashley Judd at a game against Western Kentucky. Ashley Judd's there in the middle of the crowd.
Yeah.
I love it.
She comes to the games when she can come to the games, and if she doesn't have to be at the North Carolina game. I think she was this year, but you know she's got her schedule about, you know, with her, you know, making movies and whatever else she's involved in. But you know she'll come to any game she can come to.
Now I have a quick question back to you, being a minister, and you said you travel the country speaking. Have you heard Chris Herron speak yet?
I have not. I've heard the story, but I've not heard him speak.
I actually went 2 weeks. I mean, it was 2 months ago. He was down the Jersey Shore. Phenomenal. It was. I was curious because he just was so riveting. There wasn't a sound in the whole auditorium for in the hour and a half he spoke. It was crazy.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'd like to hear him speak sometime because I'm certainly familiar with the story.
Okay, I just want to end the interview with a couple more questions. I always ask every celebrity on the show, any athlete, anyone who I'm always a fan of, if I take Cameron Mills' phone right now, who's the coolest person in your phone right now? You want to impress somebody at a party? Like, look at my phone. I have who's going? Because I just want to tell you something. So I told you I'm really, really good friends with Chris Canty and Matt Schaub. Yeah. All these guys are telling me. And Derek Anderson had the best one. I asked. He goes, "Oh, Michael Jordan." I'm like, "Oh, he goes, yeah, he's in my phone." I text. Yeah. So Derek, no one's going to beat Derek Anderson.
You're right.
I want to hear who's your.
Oh man. You know what? It would probably be, and I'm trying to think, it might be Billy Donovan. It might be the best I can do right now. But you throw that Michael Jordan story out, and anything I say now is going to pale in comparison to that. It's been a long time since I've gone through my phone and looked at stuff like that. But that, you know, I'll tell you this, Mike, that is a great question. I've not heard. I've done a lot of podcasts and a lot of interviews, and no one has ever asked that question before. That's a great question.
Thank you.
I think that's great. I think that's a good idea.
Because you know what? I asked, who's Tim Couch? Tim Couch said it was some country singer Tim Couch had. So I asked every single person, and when Derek Anderson said Michael Jordan, I was like, you kind of ruined the whole
thing.
Because who's going to top, for real? Who's going to top?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Maybe the President of the United States is the only thing that could possibly talk.
I would say him. Tiger Woods would be up there too if you can have Tiger Woods' phone number. And you want to hear? You know who Josh Booty is? He played at LSU.
Yeah, know the name. Okay.
Okay, so Josh Booty, him and Tim Couch are pretty good friends. So after I interviewed Tim Couch, he retweeted it, and Josh Booty inboxed me. He's like, "Oh, I'll do an interview with you. We'll have a good time." Josh Booty actually had O.J. Simpson's phone number in his phone a while ago. So that was pretty good.
See, that's up there too. That's a pretty good one.
Let me ask you real quick. How good do you think Anthony Davis and Kid Gilchrist, those are the two main players on the team, how good do you think they're going to be? You think they're going to be special or just...
Well, I will say right now, I don't think there's any doubt. And look, I base what I'm getting ready to say on what I've heard, you know, guys who do this for a living say. You know, because I'll tell you the one thing I realized about myself at some point is that, you know, as far as basketball goes, really probably as far as any sport goes, I am not a good evaluator of talent. I can't tell you. I can't look at a high school kid and say this kid can play at the D1 level. I can't look at a college basketball player and say this kid can play in the NBA. I just don't have that ability. But, you know, from what I understand, you know, Anthony Davis, everyone pretty well expects him to be, you know, I've heard people say a 10-year all-star in the NBA. So I think, you know, you never say never. You never know what could happen. But I think the expectation is Anthony Davis is going to be a special player. You know, from what I'm hearing also, Kid Gilchrist is supposed to go number 2 overall in the NBA draft, which that's pretty incredible too. You know, you look back on that, you think about what would have happened, Mike, if these two kids go 1 and 2 in the NBA draft and we didn't win the national championship this year. Think about what a disappointment that would have been. So we did win it, thank goodness. But, you know, for Kid Gilchrist to go number 2, but I think there's more question about if he's going to be a game changer the way Anthony Davis is. I think he's going to have an NBA career, but is he going to be a game changer? Anthony Davis is a game changer.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, last thing, who are you still friends with anyone from the team? Like, are you still close with any players from the old teams? You still talk to them? You guys still keep in touch?
Jeff Shepherd lives in London, Kentucky. He, of course, was from Georgia, but married a girl that he met at UK. Actually, her name was Stacey Reed. She was on the women's basketball team at Kentucky. So she was from London. So Jeff's moved to London. So he's only an hour away from me. And he and I talk at least, I don't know, I'd say once a month, if not text once a month. Usually trying to get each other to help each other out with different events. You know, someone will call me and say, you know, hey, listen, we're putting on a golf scramble. Can you come? Oh, and then can you invite some of your famous friends? Which, you know, all my famous friends are UK basketball players. So it's one of those things. So, you know, I'll have to call Jeff and say, hey, I need you to cover for me at this event. Is there any way you can speak at this thing? Can you do this? And then occasionally we just get together and hang. And that's really what's fun because a lot of these players Kentucky's kind of become a home for them, if not a second home. And, you know, they'll kind of migrate back here during the off season because many of my teammates wound up having professional careers, actually just about
especially
all of them.
Especially that 96 team. You had like 8 or 9 players go to the NBA.
8 or 9 players from that team wound up going, you know, playing at least professional basketball. I think most of them in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them will, you know, now that their careers are winding down, they wind up back in Lexington a lot. And I tell you what, there's very little as fun as getting back together with teammates like that who you spent so much time with and just kind of reminiscing on, you know, not even the great stories, not even what it was like to win a national championship. Most of the time we're telling funny stories on each other, laughing at, you know, what Coach Pitino made somebody do, you know, what somebody, you know, some stupid decision somebody made in a game or, you know, like I said earlier, Jeff calling that timeout when I had the ball in my hand because he didn't feel like he felt like I was going to turn it over. You know, stuff like that, just laughing at each other about the dumb things we did when we played ball. And that's really what's so much fun.
That's awesome. Now, Cameron, I can't thank you enough. So here's my last question for you. And I ask every player, every person who comes on the show, I'm not a memorabilia guy at all. I don't collect anything. The only thing I have in my house, I have 2 seats from Yankee Stadium that I bought when they tore down the stadium. And I bought a piece, Steiner Sports was selling like a piece of Rupp Arena, like a piece of the floor.
Sure.
So every person I have on the show, everyone, I send them down something, or they send me up something to sign so I can hand in my house. Is it cool after we hang up, we'll write to each other. I'm going to send you down either I'm going to get your book or I'm going to get a Kentucky jersey made up, whatever. You sign it for me, I can hang it in my house?
Absolutely.
Cameron, thank you so much. Listen, I appreciate it. I had a great time with you. Thank you so much for coming on, taking time, and just have a great day, man. I'll keep in touch with you.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it, my friend.
Cameron, have a great day, buddy.
You too. Bye-bye.
See you later. The great Cameron Mills. I'll be honest, that's one of the funnest interviews I've done in a while. And listen, I promise, I got around, this is the truth, 30 or 40 text messages. I promise, no more Kentucky basketball. I can talk about it every day. I can talk about the recruiting. And when we signed Nerlens Noel and Goodwin, when the recruiting show came on, almost Shabazz Muhammad, who boxed out and went to UCLA, when all that happened, I was going to come on real quick and do a show about getting Nerlens Noel. That's how excited I am. But listen, I promise, No more Kentucky talk. We're going to go to full-blown Yankee talk tomorrow. Bald Vinny on the show. I'm working on a player. He's on the team. He doesn't really play that much. But I was at the stadium. I can't really get into it, but I'm working on another player. But we got Bald Vinny tomorrow night. I believe we're doing the show tomorrow at 8 or 8:30. Chuck Philpott will be back. No more Kentucky talk. The next Kentucky guest we have on the show will be Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. He's going to be drafted second or third overall. We're not sure if Robinson from Kansas will go too or Kidd-Gilchrist. Hopefully we can get some of these guys to the East Coast. When Cousins went, Bledsoe, they're all out west. We get John Wall out here. We need some of these new guys. I wish Anthony Davis can come out here. So we're going to have Michael Kidd-Gilchrist on a couple days after the draft. That's going to be phenomenal. We'll talk about whatever team he's going to. And that's about it. So I just want to tell everybody have a great day. We hit over 1,000 listeners. Thank you for the University of Kentucky, the websites, UK Athletics for streaming this. You can listen on demand. Everyone have a great day. This is The Good Life, and thank you for listening to the Cameron Mills interview. Thank you, Cameron. See you later, buddy. Bye.